We're holding Rav Amud Aleph, the fourth line. We're talking about the Yoda and Malkush, or Moda and Malkush, in the pasuk that we quoted in the Mishnah. So let's talk about what those reigns are. Remember, we're talking in Eretz Yisrael and Babel and other places in the world like that, that have a defined rainy season, only during the fall and only during the fall and the winter. So you have Yoda is the early rain at the beginning of the season. Malkush is the late rain, like the last or next to last rain of the season. And in between them is the rainy season. And then after that, after the Malkush, it's expected to be dry for the rest of the year. So Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Yoda, why is the first rain called Yoda? Shemoda is Abrius, because it instructs people the rainy season is coming. So it's time to do the things that need to be done before the rain really seriously gets underway. La'tiach gagri sehen, to replaster their roof so they don't have leaks. Or la'achnas is peres sehen, to bring in their fruit or their produce, which has been drying in the fields all summer. V'las is kotso kehen, and do anything else that they need to do before the rainy season. So in other words, the idea is the Yoda is like, it's the first rain, and generally speaking, it's a fairly gentle rain. So it's like an early warning. You better get these things done now, because soon the heavy rains are going to be coming, and then you're going to have leaks, or your produce is going to be ruined or whatever. Haggai Sabach also adds another line that Yoda also means that it's Yodad Benachas, that it comes down gently, which we'll deal with that. We have that soon in the Gemara. Haggai Sabach just moves it over here. Anyway, Dover Acher, another explanation why it's called Yoda. Shemirave Sa'oret, because it quenches the thirst of the ground. So Yoda is Moloshin Rova. Omashka Abdahoim, and it waters the ground and then wets it all the way down to the depth. Shenema, you have a pasuk that expresses the idea that rain can be described as rova, as quenching the thirst, as slaking the thirst. The pasuk says, "Tlameha rave," you quench the thirst of its furrows, meaning when they plow and you have furrows in the ground, so the rain then falls and waters and fills up those furrows. Naches gedudeha, bring nachas to the legions of people that are in Eretz Yisrael. Later on Daf Ches, we're going to have a different drush on it. Revivim to Megagena, with showers. Revivim is like the Revivim Ali Esev from Hazinu. Revivim to Megagena, with revivim, with showers of rain, to Megagena, you will melt it, you'll soften it. Simcha tevarech, and you bless its growing things. So we see, in other words, that the rain can be described as merava, and therefore the word moda or yoda comes from that. Dover acher, yet another explanation why it's called yoda. She yodet benachas ve'ena yodet bezaaf, because it comes down gently rather than harshly. How does that have to do with the word yoda? So Rashi gives a few different explanations. One is that the word Yoda, therefore, is related to the word Moda, a teacher. So a teacher teaches his students gently. So Yoda also refers to a gentle rain rather than a heavy, harsh one. A second explanation, Rashi says, Yoda also means, when we're saying that it comes gently, means Yoda means like an arrow that's shooting, an arrow that shoots straight and goes straight to its target rather than going this way or that. The same way, in other words, you have heavy rains and then Rashi says another explanation from Sifri, that it means similarly, that it goes straight down to the ground. It doesn't go every which way. In other words, the idea is a heavy rain, you're going to have the rain and the water of it goes every which way on the ground, as opposed to the Yoda goes straight like an arrow into the ground, into the places where it's needed. So that's another reason why it's called Yoda. Okay. But the Braisa continues, but how do you know? The word Yoda, on the other hand, given that we just said the word Yoda can also mean like an arrow, so maybe it means it's strong and harsh like an arrow. Maybe it's called Yoda because it causes the fruit to fall off the trees, and it floods away the seeds that have been planted in the ground, and it washes away the trees as well. So in other words, it's not completely a bracha. So now it's still a bracha in the sense that you have water to drink, if nothing else. But how do we know that it's not also called Yoda because of those negative things that it accomplishes? Talmud Lema Malkush. Well, the Pasuk says, Nasati Matar Artachan Be'itoy, Yore Umalkush. So, Ma Malkush, the Bracha, just like Malkush is necessarily for a Bracha, because, and Rashi says, how do we know that? Well, we're going to have to revisit that in the Gemara in a minute. But the point is that at the time when the Malkush falls, which again we said was Nissan time, then you don't have fruits on the trees to be knocked off by the rain. You don't have seeds in the ground because they planted the seeds months earlier. So therefore, of necessity, it has to be that the Malkush is good. And it's called Malkush, as we're going to say soon, for a number of reasons, one of which is it's yoded ala melilos falakashim, because it lands on the grain. The melilos is the actual grain itself that's in the stalks, and the kashim, the straw, that's the stalks that hold up the grain, and it helps fill them out and complete their development. So therefore, Malkush is necessarily good, and it can't be the kind of thing that has the negative effects of knocking fruit off the trees and so forth, because those don't exist that time of year. So therefore, since the Pasuk is putting them together, Yoda or Malkush, Ma Malkush Lebracha, Af Yoda Lebracha, then the Yoda also has to be something that's for Bracha rather than the opposite. So therefore, it has to be that the Yoda is not a Lashon Klala, like we said, and also, again, what would we say? First of all, again, because Yoda, we said, would be like an arrow, but also Rashi explains that the word Yoda can also be related to a word for throwing down. By Matan Torah, anybody who climbs up Har Sinai, Soko Yisoko, or Yora Yiyora, he will be thrown down. So therefore, so that's what we were saying, that maybe the word Yoda all has a negative connotation as well, and we're saying that no, since the Pasuk puts it together with Malkush, then we're saying that not. Now, of course, the question is, the Pasuk is saying, V'hoyim Shemaya, which means that if you do Hashem's mitzvahs, then he's going to give you these brachas. How does the Gemara even have a Hava Amina that the Yoda itself could be something negative? The whole point is, Hashem is talking about what is going to reward us for the mitzvahs. So Rashi says what it means is, maybe we would have thought to parse the Pasuk as follows. V'hoyim Shemaya Tishmu HaMitzvah. Say, if you keep my mitzvahs, then the reward for that is left unspecified in the Pasuk. And then it's implying, but if you don't do what you're supposed to do, then you're going to have Yoda, which we're saying maybe the word Yoda means something negative. However, Marashah says, come on, that's a doichek. There's nothing in the Pasuk there to suggest anything about you doing not exactly what you should. So therefore, Marashah says, okay, but the vote is, the Pasuk is saying that I'll give it to you be'itoy, in its time, implying, so when they come at the proper time, then fine, they're a bracha. But the question of the Braisa was, how do we know that Yoda, even if it's not at the right time, is always a good thing? Maybe it does have those negative effects, like we said, knocking the fruit off the trees and so on and so forth. And therefore, as we're saying, since the Pasuk puts them together and Malkush is always going to be a bracha, then therefore the implication is that Yoda is always a bracha. A different other very interesting answer is that the chlal, the psukim over there, v'hoyem shamaya tishmo mitzvaysai, v'nasati mitar arzachem v'itoy, v'asafti d'gonecha, etc. There's a discussion in Gemara Brachas about when is this pasuk supposed to take place. According to Rav Shimon ben Yochai over there, when the Jewish people are oisim ritzon shamokim, we're not the ones who have to gather in our crops and then water our fields and so on and so forth. Anyway, the goyim will do it for us. So therefore, whereas Rabbi Shmuel says over there that minag derech eretz is that you have to do it yourself. So therefore, another possible way we could explain our Gemara is the Pasuk is saying, fine, because after all, you are basically doing what Hashem wants, but you're not fully doing what Hashem wants. After all, then it wouldn't be talking about anyway, the Goyim would be doing it for you. So therefore, we're saying that maybe in that case, the Yoda has a negative aspect to it as well, and we're saying that not, it has only a positive aspect. But now we have to look at the Malkush itself. Fine, it's not knocking the fruit off the trees and washing away the seeds, because those don't exist that time of year. But maybe Malkush has another meaning that's negative as well. The word Malkush we can also understand as short for the words mol, which means to cut, like bris milah, and kosher, which means the hard things. So in other words, that it cuts down and destroys the hard, tough things. So elisha mapilos abatim, for example, it knocks down houses, or meshaber seilonis, and it breaks trees, or mala sasakoyin, and it causes sakoyim which are locusts, to come, because they're attracted when there's moisture around. Rashi points out, according to that, the word Malkush might also be, how would Malkush be related to locusts? There's a kind of locust described in the Pasuk with the word Lekesh. Literally, the word Lekesh means something late in the season. So locusts are so cold because they come late in the season when there's already a lot of growing things. And Malkush, maybe we're saying also, would be the late rain. But the point is, so you're telling me as a given that Malkush is always good because it doesn't knock the fruit off the trees and so forth, but it can have its own bad effects. So how do you know then that the Malkush is always unambiguously good such that you can learn from it to Yoda? Tamid Lema Yoda. Therefore, let's go back to Yoda. My Yoda Lebracha, Malkush Lebracha. So now we're going to go the other way around. We're going to say that Yoda itself is a Bracha, as we're going to show in a second, and Malkush, therefore, is a Bracha as well. Now, I mean, it's a little hard to understand the flow of the Gemara, though. First, we're assuming that Yoda is not necessarily 100% good, that it can have its bad sides as well. Then we're saying, but Malkush is always good. Then we're saying, but Malkush is not necessarily always good. We're going to prove from Yoda, but that's circular logic. We haven't yet proved that Yoda itself is good. So Marsha brings over here that actually the Yalkut Shimoni has a somewhat different girsa over here that says that from the Pasuk that we're going to learn now, we're going to see that both Yoda and Malkush are good, because we have the Pasuk that we referred to in the Mishnah about what happened in the time of Yoyo with the Yoda and Malkush both falling in Nissen, and it's calling them Livracha and Litzdaka. Anyway, so the Yoda Gufa Minolan, so where do we see that Yoda itself is good? Dichtiv, that Pasuk that we quoted before, we quoted only part of the Pasuk, but the Pasuk from Yoel. Uvnei Tzion, Gilu Usmachu Vashem Alekechem, children of Tzion, meaning the Jewish people, rejoice and be happy with Hashem your God. He nasa machemes ha-moda l'tzedakah, because he gave you the moda, which we said was another word for Yoda, for tzedakah. So the fact that it's calling Yoda tzedakah implies that Yoda is always good. By Yoda Lacham Geshem, and he brought down for you rain, Moda or Malkush, the Moda, the early rain, Malkush, and the late rain, Barishon, in the first month, as we said yesterday, that in that year, they all happen in Nissan. So the point is, we see from that Moda or Yoda is good. It's called Tzedakah, or according to the Yalkut Shimoni's gear, so the word is the fact that we're saying that we should thank Hashem for the Moda and the Malkush shows that both of them are unambiguously good things. And therefore, so now when we say the parrot, when we say the pasuk in Krishma, v'nasati mitar artzachem b'ito Yoda or Malkush, now we can understand that it's not, we should think that maybe sometimes the Yoda is not so good and the Malkush is not so good. Like Marsha said, for example, that maybe only b'ito they're good, but not when they're not b'ito. No, we're saying regardless, they're always good. Now, when do they take place? When in the year do they take place? Tanan Abanan, Yoda b'mal cheshven or Malkush b'nissen. The Yoda takes place in cheshven. The Malkush, the late rain, the last rain of the season, takes place in Nissen. After Oyma Yoda b'mal cheshven or Malkush b'nissen. Now, you're saying it's like that. Oy eina ela Yoda b'tishrei or Malkush b'ir. How do you know the Yoda isn't earlier in Tishrei and the Malkush isn't later in Ir? Tamad lema b'itoi. Tamad lema b'itoi Malkush. Therefore, the pasuk says, "When asatim b'tar arzachem b'itoi in its time," and it mentions Yoda or Malkush, and Malkush is not going to be later than Nissan, because we're going to say later on in the perek that once we mentioned it briefly earlier, that after Nissan is over, then rain is already not a simon bracha anymore. Okay, so therefore, necessarily the Malkush has to be no later than Nissan. Okay. So the time of the Be'itoi, you're actually there. Therefore, the pasuk says Be'itoi, meaning that both of them are in their proper time. The proper time for the Yoda is in Cheshvan. The proper time for the Malkush is in Nissan. And the pasuk says Be'itoi, so that means that's when Hashem is promising that he's going to bring them. Okay, now why do we call the late rain Malkush? So we said before why we call the early rain Yoda. Now, why do we call the end of season rain Malkush? It's something that cuts off the hardness of the Jewish people. Meaning you might have that the Jewish people were not acting the way they should, and therefore Hashem withhold the rain. That causes them to do tshuva and to fast and to do all the tefillahs, as we're going to talk about in this perek and the next perek. So then Hashem brings the rain, and that breaks down, that cuts down their stubbornness. They see that Hashem does good for them and accepts their tshuva and brings rain. So Marsha wonders, in that case, then why is only the late rain called Malkush? I mean, the whole point is, if they do tshuva, then the early rains come as well. So in fact, one explanation is just that. You might have that the whole season, at the beginning of the season, if it's not rainy yet, people are not going to be so worried about it. Okay, you know, the rain will come when it comes. When they see by the end of the season, it hasn't come yet, an entire winter, they haven't had rain. They're really doing tshuva sincerely. So at that point, then the Malkush falls. That's one explanation. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, Dava Shemamalit Tvur B'Kasher. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned a second explanation. It's called Malkush, because it's short for the word Memale B'Kasher. It fills up the grain in its straw. In other words, you have the grain has already been growing for months. The Malkush has the effect of filling it out and completing it and completing its development. Dover a b'masnisaton and a brisa we learn another reason why it's called malkush. Dover sheyered on a melilos falakashin, because it lands on the melilos, which are the actual grain itself. Melilos means grain, like a katafta melilos biadecha, and kashin on the straw. So again, in other words, it falls on them when they're almost ripe, and when it falls on them when they're almost ripe and helps complete their development. The reason why, by the way, why the Gemara needs so many different limudim to say what malkush means. So b'chlal, the Tertz Mimah has an interesting point. He says in general, Lashon Kodesh has shoshim of three letters. So whenever the Chachamim find a word in Torah that seems to have a shoshim of more than four letters, they tend to darshan it as a portmanteau, as two words packed into one. So therefore, Malkush is an example of this. Now, you could argue that the Mem is just a prefix and the Shodesh is Lekesh, like we said before, the late thing. But the Gemara seems to be understanding that the Mem is actually part of the Shodesh, and therefore we have a four-letter Shodesh. Well, a four-letter Shodesh, most of the time, we're going to assume is actually made up of two-letter words put together. 7:45. Okay. Fine. So those are the various reasons it's called Malkush. Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa. Yerda b'mal cheshvin and Malkush b'nissin. Again, we said that the Yerda is in cheshvin, the Malkush is in nissin. Now let's analyze that in detail. After Omer Yerda b'mal cheshvin, enel b'chodesh kislev. So before we said, how do we know maybe it's earlier in Tishrei? Now we're saying, how do we know that it's dafka in cheshvin? Maybe the Yerda first takes place in kislev. So again, Talmud Lama be'ito yoda or malkush, ma malkush be'ito, af yoda be'ito, just like the malkush takes place in its proper time, so does the yoda take place in its proper time. Kislev is already not the proper time, it's late for it. And at kivin sheyotzen nissen v'yoduk shomim, once nissen has passed and rain falls, einei simin bracha, then it's no longer a simin bracha. Now, what does that have to do with this over here? Marashah says, in fact, maybe this doesn't belong over here. Maybe this, in fact, belongs by the earlier braisa, where we were saying, how do we know the malkush is not an ear? Because the malkush can't be an ear because rain is not a simin bracha then. On the other hand, there's an explanation that the vort is, it does belong over here. The point is, of necessity, we're saying the malkush cannot be later than nissen because of that. Therefore, we also have to understand that the yoda cannot be later. B'itoy means it can't be later than its expected time. If we were to move the timetable to kislev and iyo respectively, then you'd have a problem with malkush. But then, so fine, the yoda being in kislev is not in and of itself a problem, but the fact that it says b'itoy on both them implies that neither of them is later than expected. The yoda is expected in cheshvin, kislev would be late for it, and the malkush is not only it's expected in nissen, but after nissen, it's a simen klala, so therefore necessarily it can't be any later than that. So therefore that tells us that the yoda is not supposed to be as late as kislev. But tanya idach, we learn in another braisa, it's not so simple. Yoda b'machesh and malkush b'nissen divrei Reb Meir, that's only according to Reb Meir, b'chamim yoda b'kislev. The chachamim say, as a matter of fact, yes, the yoda, the time for the yoda is in kislev. Well, man chachamim, who are the chachamim represented in that braisa? Amar Rav Chista Rav Yosi. Specifically, that would be according to Rav Yosi. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Ezehi Revia Rishona, what is the time of the first rain? Now we're going to mention soon that you have three times that you have three times during Cheshvan or the beginning of Kislev when you have the expected times when rain is going to fall. Obviously, it's going to vary a little bit from year to year, but these are the particular times we're going to talk about further on. We're going to talk about what the Nafka Mina is for each one of them. So the first one we're going to say soon is whenever the first one is expected is the time when you start davening for rain in Eretz Yisrael. Given that we said in our Mishnah, or in the previous Mishnah, we said, Ein Sholem Esag Shamim Ela Samachol Shamim. We start asking for rain, saying the same Talamotar, only close to the time of the rain, only around the time when the rain is actually expected. So therefore, so to know when Revia Rishona is relevant as far as that. Revia Shnia, we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara, a number of Nafka Minas for it. Revia Shlishis is, if the rain hasn't started falling by that time, then they're going to have to start declaring fasts. So we're saying Revi'a Rishona. So Ezer Revi'a Rishona. So what is Revi'a Rishona? Habakira B'Shloisha. The earliest one is on the third of Cheshvan. B'Shloisha B'Cheshvan. Beninis B'Shiva Boy. The middle one is on the seventh one. Is on the seventh of Cheshvan. Afila, and the late one B'Shiva Osaboy is on the 17th of Cheshvan. Divrei Rav Meir. There are, by the way, different explanations of this. Rashi again is saying that we're not actually talking about Revi'a Rishona. We're actually talking about this defined all three Revi'as. So according to him, the times are 3, 7, and 13 of Cheshvan, 3, 7, and 17 of Cheshvan. So those are the three Revi'as. Meaning, in other words, according to him, the third of Cheshvan would be the time to ask for rain. The seventh of Cheshvan would be when a number of dinim kick in that we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara. And the 17th would be, if rain hasn't started falling by then we have to start working on declaring Ta'anesim. There are different explanations of it, one of them being the Rambam, who holds that no, all of this is actually the definition of Revi'a Shnia. All of these dates that Rav Meir and the various other Tanoim are going to define over here are all the dates of Revi'a Shnia, which we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara, the Nafka Minna of it, Lahalacha. In other words, the point is, but in some years, the Revi'a Shnia is a few days earlier, and some it's a few days later. So Rav Meir is saying the earliest that the Revi'a Shnia, that the second rain of the season ever happens, is the third of Cheshvan. In an average year, it's the seventh. And in a really late year, a year when like the when the Jewish dates are early in the secular calendar, like this year, then it'll be the 17th of Cheshvan. But according to that, it's all talking about one particular Revi'a. The Girsa that we have in front of us in the Gemara over here, Ezer Revi'a Rishona, would be a variation on that, that Rav Meir is defining when the first Revi'a takes place. In other words, when to start saying the same Talamata. Anyway, that's Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda, I'm a Beshiva of Yud Zayin of Esther Mishloisha. Rav Yehuda says the dates are respectively the 7th, the 17th, and the 23rd. So he moves them further out than Rav Meir does. Rav Yossi, I'm a Yud Zayin of Esther Mishloisha over the Shchodesh Kislev. Rav Yossi says the three dates are the 17th and the 23rd of Cheshvan and Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So now when we said before Yoda the Kislev, then that's what we're saying is according to Rav Yossi, because according to Rav Yossi, Kislev is a perfectly normal time for the Yoda. Again, if we say that Rav Yossi is talking about the third rain of the season, like Rashi learns, then it means the third rain of the season can still be considered part of the Yoda. And he's saying that takes place on or around Rosh Chodesh Kislev. If you say it means Revi'a Shnia, which is really when, as we're going to say soon, that's really when the rainy season is considered to officially begin, as the first one we said was only like an early warning. So therefore, so it means, again, he's saying that the Revi'a Shnia, which is the second rain, which is the real beginning of the rainy season, can be Rosh Chodesh Kislev, and that's still part of the Yoda. Rav Yossi, in keeping with that, said that even when, if there's no rain, and we're going to say later on the Perek that first the Yechidim, which is the Talmid HaChamim, start fasting before they start being goyzer on the Tzibur, but even the Yechidim don't fast until Rosh Chodesh Kislev comes, because up until that point, it's a perfectly normal time that the rain could be delayed until then. The Amar of Chista, Halacha Rav Yossi. So Rav Chista says the Halacha is like Rav Yossi, meaning that the earliest time is the 17th and the latest is Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Although Rashi brings further on a girsa that actually Rav Chista says the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. So we'll get back to that point soon. Amemar masni lahodir Rav Chista baholishna. Now, on the other hand, Amemar learned what Rav Chista was saying in the following lashon, in connection with the following thing. The next Mishnah says, "V'shloisha b'macheshvan sholim esagshamim." On the third of Cheshvan is when he started asking for rain, saying the same talamotar in Eretz Yisrael. Ram Gamliel I'm a b'shiva boy, and Ram Gamliel says we start on the seventh of Cheshvan. Amar Rav Chista halacha k'Ram Gamliel, and Amemar's version was that Rav Chista said the halacha is like Ram Gamliel, that you start from the seventh. So the Gemara asks, "Man oz lahodatanya?" Well, of the various Tanoim that we said before, Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yossi, with their various timetables of when the rain begins, according to which one would the following Braisa go? Hadatanya, this is that we learn in a Braisa. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Mekshomim Shiyodu Shiva Yamim Zachazer, when it rains for 7 days in a row. So in other words, Rashi described, so it rained, then there was a break in the rain, and then you had, and then there was a break in the rain, and then it rained for 7 days successively. Or Hagos Marav Ranchburg changes what Rashi's saying a little bit to say that it rained successively for 7 days from that first rain. After Moina Behen Revir Rishono Shnei Oshlishis, you can count within that time, you have the first and second and third Revir. Now, Tosfos points out that it doesn't really necessarily work to say that Rashi actually points out that it can't really be both the first and all of them, the first and second and third. None of the Tanoim we just mentioned have the Revir Rishona Shnei Oshlishis within such a short time frame. Reb Meir has it spread out over 2 weeks from the 3rd to the 17th of Cheshvan. Reb Yehuda has it spread out over 16 days from the 7th to the 23rd. And Reb Yossi has it spread out also over 2 weeks from the 17th to Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So none of them actually have all three of them within a week. What we mean is, Rashi says, it means either the first and second or the second and the third. So in other words, we have to find a Tana that it says that two of those can be within a week of one another. So which Tana would that be like? That would have to be like Reb Yossi, because according to Reb Yossi, you have the 17th and the 23rd, which is within 7 days of one another, and the 23rd and Rosh Chodesh, which is also within 7 days of one another. If you count the 7 days, meaning exclusive of the last day itself, because you have 23, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, that's 7 days, and the next day is Rosh Chodesh. In other words, the point is, it wouldn't work out according to the other Tanoim, because according to the Meir, you have 10 days between the second and third, so it wouldn't fit within 7 days. And according to the Yehuda, you have 10 days between the first and the second. And so it could only work according to the Yossi. Tosfos brings a different gears over here and a different explanation. That what it means is that specifically it would be Revia Shni O Shlishis, the second and the third, and that would be according to Reb Yossi. Namely, suppose it starts raining in the middle of the day of Chaf Gimel, and it continues raining for 7 days straight, meaning 7 24-hour periods. When does it end? In the middle of the day, Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So therefore, so you don't have to say like Rashi that you're excluding the last day. You just say that, in other words, it's 7 24-hour periods, beginning from the middle of Chaf Gimel and ending the middle of Rosh Chodesh. And that would be, according to Reb Yossi, there you have, within that, there would be a Shnei Oshlishis. And again, that could only work according to Reb Yossi, because none of the other Chachamim have a timetable like that, where there's specifically 7 days between one and the next. So that would be like Reb Yossi. And the Gemara says again, Omer Rav Chista Halacha k'Reb Yossi, that the Halacha is like Reb Yossi, which means, so, but now Rashi brings over here that he brings from his Rebbe that really it should be Halacha k'Reb Yehuda, meaning Reb Yehuda, who's saying that the earliest rain takes place on the 7th of Cheshvan, that would mean, in other words, that that's when you start saying the same Talamata. And therefore, that would fit with what we just said. Rav Chista said the Halacha is like Rav Gamliel, who also says that you start on the 7th. On the other hand, the Rishonim who have a girsa that it means that the halacha that it was the halacha is like Reb Yossi, they would say, in other words, that there's a difference between when it comes to saying the same talamata. We have a stam mishnah later on that says that that you start asking for it on the 7th. But on the other hand, when it comes to fasting, then we say that you only start from Rosh Chodesh Kislev, like Reb Yossi says, because that's the absolute latest that the Yoder could be falling, and if it hasn't by that time, then it's time for the Yechidim to start fasting. So even though the Gemara seems to be equating the two of them, those the Rishonim say that not necessarily does it actually come out that way. La-la-la. Okay. So the Gemara asks, the Shlema Revia Rishona Lisho. I understand what the relevance is of knowing when the Revia Rishona takes place or when it's expected. That means that's the time to start saying the same Talamata. Shlishish Lehsanis. And we know what the relevance of the third one is, that if it hasn't rained even once by the time of the Revia Shlishis, then it's time for the Yechidim to start fasting. But what's the relevance lahalacha of knowing when the second revia is, that we have all the Tanoim giving different dates for it? So Reb Zeira says, first of all, nafkamina, as far as Nedarim. Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masech the Nedarim, Hanodu Adag Shamim, if a person makes a neder that he's going to do something or not do something until the rain. So for example, Rashi says he makes a neder, I'm not going to have Hanav from such and such until the rains. So Misha Yodug Shamim, or he says, from when the rain falls on the side of here, really it's supposed to be Ad Shiyahu Ag Shamim, until the rain is. So either of those Lashonis, Ad Ag Shamim or Ad Shiyahu Ag Shamim, means the Neder is Chal Ad Shiyahu Ag Shamim, until the Revia Shnia falls. The reason is because by Nedarim, you go according to the common Lashon of people. People don't think of the Yoda as the beginning of the rainy season. Because again, like we said before, the Yoda is more like a warning that the rainy season is approaching. Time to fix up your roofs and do all your other pre-winter projects. But only when it comes to Revi'a Shnia, and in particular from then on, the roads are muddy, that's when people think of it as the beginning of the rainy season. Therefore, when a person says a neder, ad gashamim, or ad shiyu gashamim, means until then. So that's one nastamim. Also, Rashi says another explanation why ad gashamim would mean until the second one. Gashamim is plural, so it means when there's been two rains. The Me'iri points out with this and with a number of the other things that we're saying over here that the Pashtus, what it means is, in other words, we're not just talking until the time comes, it would have to be until the time comes and the rain falls. Meaning, in other words, let's say according to the mayor who said that Revi'a Shniyah is on the 7th of Cheshvan, so we would say that we wouldn't say once the seventh of Cheshvan comes, automatically his neder expired. It would have to be that it rains on or after the 7th of Cheshvan for his neder to expire. But if, in other words, the point is, if it came the 7th of Cheshvan and there was no rain, or if it rained even the Revi'a Shniyah before the 7th of Cheshvan, then his neder is still in effect. Reb Zvid says another nafkamina is as far as olives. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Peah, Me'emasai kol adam motorim belekat l'shikho v'peah, from what point in the season is anybody, even if they're not poor, allowed to come and take leket shikha and peah? So you have, throughout the harvest season, you have leket, individual stalks of grain, or individual stalks of grain that fell while you were harvesting. Shikha, you have grain or fruit or whatever that you forgot in the field. Peah, they have to leave the corner, the edge of the field for the aniyim. But there comes a point during the season when the aniyim have already given up on them, and then anybody's allowed to take them, because at that point there's been yush. At that point, they're miyayish of it already, and there's also the point that Amma makes a point that since the pasuk says well oni v'lager tazev oisem, you have to leave them for the oni. That means the implication is you're leaving them for the poor people. You're not leaving them for the animals to eat. So once poor people have stopped coming for them, then at that point who's going to eat them? The animals. So then at that point you're allowed to go and collect them. So when is that point reached? So mishiyochu hanamoshes. That point is reached once the namoshes go through the field, and in a couple of lines we're going to explain what namoshes are. But peretubolus, what about when it comes to grapes? You have two special matnas aniyim that don't apply to any other crop. Peret, when you have individual grapes that fall when you're harvesting the grapes. And olulos are undeveloped clusters of grapes where you just have a few grapes on the cluster and they're not shaped in the normal shape of a cluster. So those you have to leave for the poor people. So at what point are you allowed to take those? Mishiyochu aniyim bakerem viyavoyu, once the aniyim have gone through the vineyard and come back again. So now at that point, if they have whatever grapes they haven't found on their last couple of trips, then already are hefker and you're allowed to take them. And the zesim, at what point are you allowed to take the leftover olives? Mishiteter, revia shnia, once the second revia has fallen. Because again, by that point, everybody's collected all the olives there are because the rain otherwise is going to ruin them. So then in that case, you're allowed to take them. The Yerushalmi over there in Pei actually explains why it is we have different shiurim for grain versus grapes versus olives. Because, for example, grapes, the aniyim love those, and therefore they're going to come for those at a later time of the season than they might for grain, etc. So we need to know when Revi'a Shniyah is to know at what point you're allowed to take the leftover grapes. So by the way, my namoshes, we said in the Mishnah that when it comes to a field of grain, you're allowed to take the leftover shinkha and peah after the namoshes have gone through. So what are namoshes? Rabbi Yochanan sabi de ozli atigra. It means old people who walk on a cane. So they walk very slowly and they look carefully. So anything that they missed already, then the other aniyim are going to figure there's no sense in even bothering to come look for them. Anything that could be found, those old people have already found. Resh Lakish am lakuti, bosa lakuti. Resh Lakish says it means when you have the point where you have gatherers after gatherers, meaning Rashi says when the Oni brings his son with him to collect. At that point, once that's happened, once we've reached the time in the season when the Aniyim bring their children to collect with them, then the other Aniyim figure in that case, then forget about it. Anything that could have been found is going to have been found already, and there's no sense bothering to schlep out there to look. So in any case, so once that happens again, then it's all hefted. Okay, so that's a second Nafka Mina of knowing when Reviya Shniya is. So number one, as far as Nedarim, and number two, as far as collecting Shitcha and whatnot of olives. Rapapa Amakadela Halach the Shvira Harshus. Rapapa says a third Nafka Mina of knowing when Reviya Shniya is when you up to what point you're allowed to walk through paths of people's fields. The Amamah, we learn in a Braisa in Bava Kamma. The Gemara talks over there at some length about the tnoyim that Yeshua made when they first conquered and settled Eretz Yisrael. Yeshua made 10 tnoyim, and then the Gemara goes on to discuss various other tnoyim. One of them, it says over there, is a din that was first made by Shlomo HaMelech. That Mahalchen Kol Adam B'Shvilei HaRishus Agitator Reviya Shniya. You're allowed to walk in paths of Rishus, meaning that you have permission to walk in other people, to walk through other people's fields as a shortcut. Agitator Reviya Shniya until the Reviya Shniya, because up until that point, it won't damage the field for you to walk through it. So therefore, it's like Zenen of Azalei Chaser. You're gaining by having a shortcut. He doesn't lose out the fact that you're using this field as a shortcut. But once it comes Reviya Shniya, and remember, he planted not long before that. So fine, the fact that the seeds are planted in the ground, that in and of itself, walking over them doesn't hurt them. But once the Reviya Shniya comes and the ground is muddy, then yes, when you walk through them, it's going to be damaging the seeds and damaging the plants that are starting to grow. And then at that point, you're not allowed to walk with them. Then at that point, you're not allowed to walk on those paths anymore. You have to go around the field now. So that's the point of knowing when Reviya Shniya is, to know when you have to stop walking through it. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Levayer Peiros Shviyos. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says another nafka mina is to know when you have to do beer of certain kinds of produce of Shviyos. Now we know that among the dinim of Shmita fruit is you have the concept of beer that at the end of the season, as we're going to say soon in the Gemara, when you come to the point when there's none of that particular kind of produce left out in the fields anymore, at that point you have to do beer of it. You have a machloikas Rishonim, what exactly beer consists of. The Rambam says it means you have to eat whatever's left of it and whatever you have left of it in your house and destroy the rest. Most other Rishonim learn that it just means you have to put it out of your house and declare it Hefter. And then afterwards, you could even take it back from Hefter if you want. The Ravid has a little bit of an intermediate position. In any case, there's a point when you have to give it over to Beis Din, and there's a point when it has to be destroyed, etc. Anyway, the point is there is a time for each kind of produce when you reach the stage of beer. For certain kinds of produce, as we're going to say now, for straw, that time is Reviya Shniya. So Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah. In Shvius, ad mosa nen in the surf in the tevin of Akashal Shvius, up until what point are you allowed to benefit from and use for burning straw and stubble of Shvius, agitated Reviya Shniya, until the Reviya Shniya falls, because at that point already, you don't have, at that point, any straw that's left in the field has already become mud, as has already gotten trampled on and become mud and is not available even for the animals to eat anymore. Therefore, my time. That's a why doctor of Yishnia. So the pasuk says by Shvius, you're allowed to have shmita produce is for your domestic animals and for the wild animals that are in your land. So why mention the wild animals? It means kolz man shechaya echelas basada. As long as the wild animals have what to eat in the field, hachel behemtecha babayis, then you're allowed to feed your animals in the house of that type of produce. But once that kind of produce is gone for the animals from the feet, for the wild animals, once it's not available to them anymore, then you have to remove whatever animal food of that type that you have in your house. And the same thing with human food. So therefore, once it comes to the point when there's no tevin and cash available in the fields anymore because it's all become trampled and muddy, then at that point, you have to get rid of any tevin and cash of Shavias that's left in your house. Again, according to the Rambam, you would have to use it up and destroy it. According to most other Rishonim, you just have to put it out and declare it Hefter. So anyway, so that's another thing we need to know when Reviya Shniya takes place. Okay. Now, Amar Rav Abahu, my Lashon Reviya, why are we calling rain Reviya anyway? Dover Shirev Ve'es Akarta. Because it's something that fertilizes the ground. Reviya, so in other words, the word reveya, like you have it, for example, reveya and nirva in connection with animals, that it means to mate. So it means something that mates with the ground and fertilizes it. Kidd Rabbi Yehuda, as we find that Rabbi Yehuda said, the Amr of Yehuda, mitra baila da'arahu, rain is the husband of the ground. In other words, just like a husband fertilizes his wife and then she produces children, the same way the rain fertilizes the ground and it produces produce. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki kasha yerid ha-geshem v'ashadig min ha-shamayim, as a pasuk expresses this, just like the rain and the snow fall from heaven, v'shama lo yoshev, and it doesn't return there without accomplishing anything, ki im hirva asaretz, first it quenches the thirst of the ground, v'hoylida, and it makes it give birth, v'hitzmicha, and it makes it produce, and it makes it produce produce. So we see the word v'hoylida implies, Maharsha says, it's like you have, like when by a man, it uses the same expression, like Abraham hoylid at Yitzchak and other such psukim, where the word hoylid, Rashi explains, means it's a causative verb. It means that he made somebody else do something. In other words, you have the word yolda, which means she gave birth. Hoylida means he made her give birth. How? By fertilizing her, by having relations with her. The same way, in other words, when we're describing the grain as halida, it means that it has the same effect on the earth as a husband to his wife, that it fertilizes her and makes her able to produce produce. Alpichzidus, there's an idea, there's something in a mimer of the Maharash on it that explains that the geshem over here also represent Torah and mitzvahs, and therefore the idea is that those are you have Hashem as the mashpia, Hashem sends that down to us, and the earth, which includes us as well, are makabel, and that fertilizes and that produces growth. But Rabbahu, also Rabbahu says, Revia Rishona, what's the definition of when there's been Revia Rishona? How do you know when it's really a full-fledged Revia? Kadesha Terid Vakauka Tefach, when it penetrates the ground to a depth of a Tefach. So in other words, if it goes in that deep, then you know that it's not going to be one of those years when there's no rain. You don't have to worry that kind of year is one of the ones where you're going to have to fast and daven for rain. Shnia, when you have the second rain, it doesn't even have to be that hard. It's enough that there's enough rain to soften up the ground to the point where now you would be able to take some of that dirt and use it for the clay stopper of a barrel without having to add more water. So it's not necessarily as much water as the previous one where it penetrates the ground to a depth of a tefach, because once you have that first one, you don't need as much rain the second one. But the point is, again, once you have that amount of rain, then don't be worried that this is going to be a year of drought. You can see already that this is going to be a year of bracha. Rav Chista says in this connection, when you have enough rain that falls at a time where the ground is softened enough that now you could use that dirt as now you can use that clay to make a stopper for a barrel without having to add extra water. There's no problem of v'otzar. You should know the klala that it says in Shema, in v'hoyim Shemaya, v'otzar so Shemaya, v'hoyim Yamater is not in effect right now. We can see that it's going to be a good year. V'omer of Chista, v'shamim sheyodu koydim v'otzar. Also, rain that falls before the time when we say v'otzar in Shema, ain behen mishum v'otzar, then there's no problem of v'otzar. In other words, again, rain that falls during that time is a simen brach. Amar Abaya lo yamaron ela kodim v'otzar de'urta. Now we say Kriyishma twice a day. So Abaya says this is only if it falls before the v'otzar of the evening. In other words, if it falls during the day before we say v'otzar in Kriyishma by Ma'ariv, then it's a good thing. So rain that falls during the day is a good thing. But if the rain is falling before the va'otzar that you say in the morning, in other words, if it falls overnight, yesh behen mishum va'otzar, then there can be a problem of va'otzar, because only rain that falls during the day is really good for the world. When it rains during the night, Rashi says it's not really so good. The mitzvah Eisan in the back of the Gemara points out that we have the famous thing that it says when Hashem gives the bracha, and b'chokosav and asati b'shmeichem b'itam means, Rashi says on the pasuk over there, we're going to have it later on in our masechta, it means on Tuesday nights and on Friday nights. So adrabba, we see that rain by night is a good thing. So he doesn't explain. He just points out the contradiction, but he doesn't explain it. But the Gemara itself is going to mention over here that it depends on how thick and heavy the clouds are. So maybe the vort is, in other words, we're going to say soon that if there are heavy clouds in the morning, then they are a good thing. So by the same token, fine, when there's a heavy rain overnight and it's still cloudy in the morning, then it's still a good thing. We learned a few blocks ago that cloudiness after the rain is a good thing. So that would be the kind of thing we're talking about, as opposed to the Gemara is going to say, when you have just thin, wispy clouds in the morning, that's what Abaya is talking about over here. So even though there was some rain overnight, but in the morning, all you have is there's little thin wispy clouds, then it's not, there's not that much of a bracha in it, and it can still be that ba'atzar is in effect, and therefore you need to make sure to be on your best behavior. So why if it rains before the morning of Otsar, is there a possible problem of Otsar? The Amr of Yehuda Bar Yitzchak, Hani Anoni Yitzchakra, clouds that you have in the morning, less behum shasha, there's no mamoshus in them. In other words, the fact that there are clouds in the morning is not a simin bracha. There's no substance to them. They're just going to disappear very soon. Dichtiv, as you find a pasuk that expresses that idea. The Navi says, the Jewish people in Hashem's name, Ma es elcha Ephraim, what can I do for you, Ephraim? I want to do, which means aser sashpatim, I want to do good for you, but you're not behaving in a way that makes you deserving of it. Ma es elcha Yehuda, what am I supposed to do for you, Yehuda? The kingdom of the two shvatim. And b'chastachem ka'anan boker, your kindness is like a morning cloud. In other words, you do good, but it's only like a temporary thing, and it disappears very quickly, just like clouds in the morning. So therefore, so we see from that clouds in the morning disappear right away. But Amalei Papa Labaya, but a Papa says, what do you mean clouds in the morning disappear right away and you don't get any rain, you don't get any bracha from them? But Ha'amri Inchi, isn't there a popular expression that people say, the Miftach Bavi Mitra, if when you open the doors of your house in the morning, you find that it's raining, Bar Chamra, then we say to the donkey driver, Moich Sakach Begani, fold up your sack and go back to sleep. In other words, the donkey drivers, they were like the truck drivers nowadays. They bring produce and they bring goods from point A to point B. So one of their jobs would be transporting grain from one place, grain and produce and whatever, from one place to another. So in other words, we tell them, if you see in the morning it's raining, don't be in such a hurry to go to work. Anyway, prices are going to be very low because it's going to be a year when there's lots of rain. There's going to be lots of rain. So therefore, that means there's going to be a lot of produce and the prices are going to be very low. So don't even bother going to work that day. You may as well go back to sleep and wait until prices are going up and you're going to make more of a profit on what you're selling. So we see, in other words, that when it's raining in the morning, it shows it is going to be a time of bracha. So the answer is like Kasha, Hodakotu Be'iva, Hodakotu Ba'anoni. It depends whether in the morning you find that the cloud, that the sky is covered with heavy clouds. Then there's no Va'otzar, then you know, fine, it was raining, it's raining nicely, and it's gonna be a year of bracha. But if you find that it's Anoni, which are thin clouds, then that's what Abaya is saying. There's still a potential problem of Va'otzar. You can still have that. That means that year Hashem is gonna hold back the rains. And therefore, you better start davening and doing tshuva to avoid that. To avoid that happening. Okay. More on this topic. Amar of Yehuda, Tova l'shata the Tevis Armalta. It's good for a year when Tevis is a widow. We said before that rain is like the husband of the earth. So therefore, when there's not rain, it can be considered like the earth is widowed. So in other words, it's a good thing. When a year in Tevis, a year when there's no rain in Tevis. Now, why is that? Isn't Tevis smack in the middle of the rainy season? So, Ika de Amri, one explanation is delay Bairi Taubitzi. One reason is because that way the Taubitzi won't be empty. Now, what are Taubitzi? Rashi says a couple of explanations. One is that it means the yeshivas. Like this, people travel to the yeshivas, and Tevis is a particularly good time for them to be going to learn because there's not much agricultural work that needs to be done. Most people in those days were farmers. So like this, Tevis is not one of the seasons of the year when you have much to do with farm work. So therefore, it was a good time for people to go learn Torah. The problem is, if it's muddy, then people have a hard time going. So it's a good year when Tevis is free of rain, because then that time of year, the Talmidim are easily able to go and be heavy goyel l'makom Torah and go from one yeshiva to another to learn Torah. That's Rashi's first explanation. So Tavitzi means the yeshivas. We find actually there's something in Sefer Yuchsin. There's a description from the times of the Gaonim of the yeshivas in Babel, and he mentions over there how you had the full time Talmidim, and then you had the Bnei Taubitza, which are more like the part time Talmidim who would come there only for the Yachikala. So we see that Taubitza means a yeshiva. It's called that because my bits in Batona, because they spread knowledge of Torah over there. That's Rashi's first explanation. The second explanation, Rashi says, is that Taubitzi means gardens. you have, there are certain kinds of vegetables. Now, we learned in Rosh Hashanah, there are certain kinds of vegetables that do need as much water as possible. On the other hand, Rashi says there are certain kinds of vegetables and things that don't need too much water. For example, Rashi says tavshinim, which are a type of bean that are mostly animal food. So therefore, so in a year when there's no rain during Tevis, fine. They already had plenty of rain during Cheshvan and Kislev. Now, if they had rain in Tevis also, it would be too much for them. Therefore, it's good in such a year when there's no rain in Tevis, and that way the plants don't get overwatered. So that's one reason. The Ikka D'Amri L'Shokol Shudfana. Another reason is because that way you don't have a problem of Shidufin. Shidufin is a disease, is a blight or something that can attack the grain, it's like some kind of mildew or something. It tends to come only when the grain is wet. So therefore, when you have a year when Tavis is dry, then good, you're less susceptible to Shidufin because it's only going to come when in wet conditions. So that's another reason why that's a second reason. The Gemara is saying why it's a good thing when Tavis is free of rain. But the Gemara asks, Adi, is that so? Well, Omer Rav Chista tovel ashata Tavis menavalta. On the contrary, Rav Chista said that a good year is when Tavis is filthy, meaning when it's rainy and the ground is filthy with mud. And the answer is like Kasha, hod to osam mitra me'ikra. It depends. If rain came earlier in the season, then it's good for Tavis to be dry. But if rain didn't come earlier in the season, then it's good for it to rain during Tavis, because at least then, fine, it hasn't rained in Cheshvan and Kislev. It's very late, but at least it's raining now. That's at least something. Rashi brings a second, a Loshan Acher, the other way around, that if it rained earlier, then it's good for it to continue in Tavis, but if it didn't, then it's not. One of the Meforshim asks, so if it didn't rain during Cheshvan and Kislev, it's good that it also shouldn't rain during Tavis. What does that mean? It's sort of a little bit what Rashi means by that. Okay. If rain falls on only part of a country and not the other part of the country, then you can see that the klala of v'otzer is not in effect, because what happens is within that country itself, so the places that got rain will have produce, they'll be able to sell their surplus to the other places, so nobody's going to be going hungry that. So therefore, it's not a problem of Otzer Es HaShemayim, that Hashem is stopping up the heavens and you have to daven for rain. The Gemara says, Eini, is that so? V'haksiv, you have a pasuk where the Navi Omer is describing to the Jewish people how Hashem caused various disasters to happen to them, hoping that would motivate them to do tshuva, and they're not. And he says, V'gam anochi manafi nechem es hageshem. I also held back the rain from you when there was still 3 months to go until the harvest. So in other words, like it rained earlier in the year, but now I stopped it raining, and now the produce is not growing anymore. And also Hashem says, I made it rain on one city, I didn't make it rain on a different city. One piece of land gets rain on it, and the other one doesn't and dries up. And now you would think it means that the pasuk is saying, okay, so some places had it good, some places had it bad, but actually, Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav that actually what the pasuk is saying, what the Navi is saying, is that both of them were bad. The one place had too much rain and it ruined their crops, and the other place had too little rain and their crops didn't grow. So what are you telling me, that it's a good thing when rain falls in one part of the country and not in a different part? And the answer is exactly that. It depends whether there was too much rain in the one area and not enough in the other. Yeah, then that's what the Navi is describing as a bad thing. And Hashem is doing that to motivate the people to do tshuva. As opposed to if you have a normal amount of rain in one area and no rain in the other, then it's not a problem, because then again, the one that had the normal amount of rain will supply the other one, and therefore nobody's going to go home. You can see that from the words of the pasuk. Dichtiv ti moter, because the expression in the pasuk is chelka achas ti moter, which means it will be rained on, but it means ti moter is short for tehei mekoy moter. It'll be a place of rain. In other words, there'll be too much rain. It'll be flooded over there. So therefore, so we see that the Navi is talking about a case where ti moter, where it's getting too much rain, not the case where it's getting a normal amount. Okay. Shmami nasa that proves it. The Gemara says, "Amar Rabba Bahu, me'ema sam of Borchen alag shomim." At what point can we say that enough rain has fallen that you say a bracha on rain?
The Mishnah tells us in Brachas that you say Hatov v'Ameitiv when it rains. So actually Rashi explains that the Gemara says over there that if you there's a difference between whether you saw it raining versus whether you heard about that it was raining. So in one case you would say Atova native, in a different case you're going to say the bracha that we're going to say over here in the Gemara. There's also the post can talk about the would Atova native only apply if you had a field of your own. What if you don't have a field of your own, etc. Anyway. So at what point, when is it that there's enough rain has fallen that it's now time to say that bracha? So it is Mishiyetzich Chosim Lekras Kala. Once the Chosim comes to greet the Kala. So what does that mean? Rashi says two explanations. Number one, it means when a drop falls on the ground, there's so much water on the ground already that it splashes upward to meet it. So therefore, like you have a drop of rain falling and a splash from the ground coming up to meet it. That's Chosim Lekras Kala. A second explanation, Ashi says, imagine that you have on the different streets over there, they have gutters coming off their roofs and they have drainage channels in the streets to drain the water. When they're draining from opposite sides of the main street into the street, that's Mishiyetzich Chosim Lekras Kala. So it's raining so much that it's draining out from both sides at the same time. The Rambam has a different explanation of it, which I think is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that it means when rain falls into a puddle and you have ripples coming out of it, and then you have enough rain is falling that the nearby drops also, the ripples of them blend with the ripples from the first one. Anyway, so that's at that point, there's been enough rain that now it's appropriate to thank Hashem for the rain. My Mevarech, what is the actual bracha? Omer of Yehuda Amar Rav, we say, Modim Anachnu L'cha Hashem Alekeinu, Alkol Tipa V'Tipa Shairad Delanu, we thank you, Hashem, for every drop of rain that you brought down for us. According to him, that's the entire bracha. Rav Yechanan Masayim Bahafi, Rav Yechanan says, no, that's not enough, you have to continue. Ilu Filu Mala Shiro Kayam, if only our mouths were as full of song like the sea, or Shenen Rina Kamen Galab, and if only our tongues were as full of praise for you, like the way as the sea is full of waves, etc. The Nusach that we say in Nishmas, Ad Al Yazvunu Rachamecha Hashem Alekeinu, Vala Yazvunu, until we get up until the point in Nishmas where we say that your mercy Hashem has never left us and it should never leave us. There's different Yosois over here that until Yamlichu Hashem Chamakeinu. Anyway, and we finish off Baruch Roiv HaHidoris. Blessed is Hashem with the many thanks. So the question is, the word Roiv has a double meaning. The word Roiv can mean many, but it can mean many as in so many, but it can also mean many as in like most, but not all. Like most says, what do you mean Roiv HaHidoris for like Kol HaHidoris? Why not say Baruch Atah Hashem Kol HaHidoris that we give you all the thanks? Amar Rava, Ema Keil HaHidoris. So Rava says, you're right. The Nusach should not be Roiv HaHidoris, but rather Keil HaHidoris, Hashem who deserves praise. And that means all the praises. Amar Apapa, so the Apapa says, well, since we have Machloikas, whether to say Roiv, Hilkach Nemrinu L'Tavayu, Keil HaHidoris, Roiv HaHidoris. Therefore, the Apapa says we should combine them together and say the bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, Roiv HaHidoris, Keil HaHidoris, Roiv HaHidoris, meaning Hashem who is thanked, with Roiv of Hodoris. And now when we're using the word Roiv, we know it's clear that it means the many Hodoris rather than most of the Hodoris. And you're first prefacing it with Kayla Hodoris. The Rambam learns a little differently. The Rambam apparently has a slightly different girsa. According to him, the Nusach is Kayl Roiv Hodoris, Hashem who is thanked with the many praises. The Balamor has a different explanation of this. He says, Rav Papa's compromise is not about the chasima of the bracha. Rav Papa's compromise is that we should say both of them. You have Rav Yehuda saying that you should only say Moedim. He learns that Rav Yechanan is saying that you should only say Ilu Finu Mola Shir Chayam. So he's saying say both of them. But as far as the chasima, you should say Baruch Atah Hashem Roiv, you should say Baruch Atah Hashem Keil HaHidoris, like we said. We don't have, by the way, we don't hear of this bracha being made nowadays, and the post can say, because most of us live in countries where there's plenty of rain. We don't have, there's not even a defined rainy season in many parts of the world, for example, here, and there's usually no time when there's a drought severe enough that anybody notices that you should be making a bracha at the end. So yeah, they say that maybe if you have a time when there's a severe drought, or if you have other countries that are like Eretz Yisrael that have long dry seasons and you have significant amounts of time without rain, then fine. When you have rain, then maybe you should make the bracha. Although even then, they say maybe say it without shame of malchus because it's a suffix whether to say it nowadays. One more interesting thing in this connection, we're saying over here that a papa said to make a compromise and to say the double chasima or the double nusach, like the Balamar says, there's actually 10 places in Shas where a papa does that, where we have there's two different opinions how to say a certain bracha, and a papa gives a compromise that's brought someplace. I don't remember the marker that. And the schus of that is why the papa had the 10 sons that we mentioned by a siyum, Chanina by papa, Rami by papa, etc. In the schus that 10 times made shalom between the chachamim, in the schus of that, he had 10 children who themselves were chachamim, and tamar chachamim, mavim shalom ba'olam. Okay.
Good. Yes,